You're listening to Wolves Potluck.
And welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And on this episode, we are excited to bring you an author chat with Benedict Nguyen, who joins the podcast to discuss her debut novel, Hot Girls with Balls, a sports love story about two Asian American trans women athletes who play in professional men's international volleyball. As always, Books and Boba is supported in part by our members. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you can gain access to our members-only Discord server, where you can talk to Rira, myself, and fellow book club members in real time. And if you join us at the Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast, Boba Chats, as well as the opportunity to help us choose a patron's choice book club pick once per quarter. As always, thank you to everyone who has joined us on Patreon so far, and we hope to see more of you there in the future.
Yeah, so for this episode, we chatted with Benedict Nguyen about volleyball, about trans women representation, about celebrity parasocial relationships, and just like how crazy the internet can be. So hopefully you guys enjoy this conversation.
Yeah, so without further ado, here is our author chat with Benedict Nguyen.
And we are here with Benedict Nguyen, who is an author and dancer and gym buff, who works as a creative producer in live performance. She's written for The Baffler, Bomb, Los Angeles Review of Books, Vanity Fair, and many more. And in 2022, she published Nasty Notes, the redacted email zine on freelance labor. Hot Girls with Balls is her first novel, and we are so excited to talk to her about this book. Welcome to the show, Benedict.
Hi, Rira. Hi, Marvin. So nice to meet you both. So stoked to be here.
Yeah. Okay, so I usually start our talks with an icebreaker, and I had an icebreaker ready to go, but then I was looking at your Instagram before this interview, and I have to ask about this. Okay, so my original icebreaker was like, oh, what's your favorite summer Olympic sports? But this one is like way more interesting. So on Instagram, I saw a clip of your book launch theater performance, and you were like rallying volleys and dancing in the rain, and I just thought it was like so refreshing. I have never seen something like that for a book launch. So can you like tell us about the performance, how you came up with it, and why you decided to do it for your book launch?
Yeah, as my bio says, I'm a dancer first, and embodiment was a huge part of how I came to understand volleyball and what this book was about. A few years ago, I had been slowly marinating on a solo performance work, like interested in endurance and calisthenics, and have just been letting that steep in the pot. And then this past fall, I was talking with my friend Sugar Vendel, who's a dancer as well as a musician. And I had the idea of turning this piece that it just like hadn't evolved into a next step, into a duet. We were living in such a strained and like awful time for the arts right now, with budget cuts everywhere. And creating this with Sugar and the 2 months up to the launch just felt such like a grounding counterpoint to the anxiety of publishing a book. I knew that like the themes between the works overlapped, but also that they're different things. They have similar thought logics, but they're, you know, one is not an adaptation of the other. But I thought it would be a fun way to, like, in launching my book, to just give this multi-dimensional experience of performance and fun and volleyball.
Yeah, I loved it because it just was so different. And I think it, like, really, especially with, like, the costuming, like, I was like, wow, this is very much, like, in vibe with the book, with the neon colors. I am really curious to, like, know more about, like, how your experience in dance, live performance, and also as a producer impact your writing. Like, what comes first, like the writer brain or like the dance brain?
Yeah, chicken and egg for sure. I feel like dancing and writing are contrasted. And that dance is like a super embodied activity, and writing is like just sitting, but also writing is, that is a kind of embodiment as well. And with my producing life, I started working as a grant writer and arts administrator almost a decade ago. And in that work, have thought a lot about how to present an artist's work so that it can get funding, either through government grants or foundation grants. And yeah, when you have 100 word count to describe a performance project that's very complex, and but you're trying to, like, present it to an audience to make an audience of funders who might want to support it, there's, like, I learned a lot about writing craft and, like, copywriting, basically, because I feel like a grant application is kind of a technical document. And it's also kind of a marketing document at the same time. And so that work of, like, how to frame the same integral idea to different audiences with different interests has made me a better writer, but also, like, helps me do my job in terms of not just writing grants, but also just facilitating a project from conception to presentation.
Yeah, for sure. I just, like, love hearing about how different disciplines of art, like, leak into a writer's profession, because it really shows in their text. Like, for example, Kazuo Ishiguro, he was a musician technically, and, like, before he became a writer, and so much of his prose is, like, you know, there's, like, this sense of atmosphere that he's able to write really well. And there are also authors out there who were, like, filmmakers, and their writing is so cinematic. So yeah, like, I think you as a dancer, like, personally, when I was reading your book, it seems like you get, like, the physicality of, like, your characters, like well done. And I don't know, just, like, little details about, like, touch. It was like, I felt like it really showed in your prose. So I was really curious to hear about, like, how your different fields of art, like, converge together in writing.
Yeah, I feel like when I'm rehearsing for a project and a choreographer will ask me to do something, like, I sometimes get the most bizarre tasks that I wouldn't ever, like, do with my own body, or let alone with, like, other collaborators in the work. And, like, we're, like, you could frame it as, like, we're troubleshooting, like, a problem. How can we get dancer from point A to point B while also doing this gesture task in the middle? But it's also, yeah, like, at the level of touch and, like, haptics, like, it's just not a way that I relate to, like, yeah, most friends who aren't dancers, you know?
Yeah. So we're always interested in learning more about our authors here on Books and Boba. So it sounds like you've had a variety of experiences in the arts, including dancing and all sorts of writing. So yeah, can you walk us through, I guess, your journey to becoming a published author, and what led you to want to write a novel?
I mentioned earlier that I'd been doing some grant writing earlier in my career. In the dance and performance world, I also started writing cultural criticism about live performance and was really curious about how performance works get created, what rehearsal processes are like, how funding works, and just all the complex labor politics, both in a rehearsal room and also within the larger ecology of dance and art works. During this time, I was also writing fiction, and I feel like moving through these genres from like having strict deadlines and having an editor, like a house style or an editorial direction that I'm following, to like the space of fiction where I'm just following my own ideas and my own relationship to structure and composition and style, has helped me develop a sense of my own voice on the page. And yeah, at some point I had an idea for a really brain rotten book about sports.
Yeah. So let's get into your novel then. For our listeners who don't know what Hot Girls with Balls is all about, can you give us a brief synopsis of your book?
Yeah, my novel's about two pro indoor volleyball players who are on rival teams, who are also quietly social media influencers and rivals. They're also lovers. And there are two Asian American trans women who play for the men's league. So my novel's called Hot Girls with Balls.
So why volleyball? Because I know there's the anime Haikyuu, and that has like really spread the fervor for volleyball, but like in general, like in America, it's not really a sports that has like a big following, like baseball and basketball. So I'm just like really curious, like what gravitated you towards volleyball, and like what about the specific sport made you go, aha, this is ripe for storytelling?
We love an underdog sport. Volleyball is so underappreciated here. Yeah, I just like, at the somatic level, I'm just so in awe of the range of physicality that a volleyball player has to access. There's so much strength and force that a player has to be able to channel through their body, but also so much agility, lightness, and yeah, that combination just really will always impress me when I watch. And with what I was like rewatching an old match of this one league's tournament, and noticed that the way that it was shot and the way that the slow-mo replays were edited were like stylized differently from other archival footage that I'd seen, and was just taken by like the art of broadcasting to like aestheticize a sport. And so was also curious on a macro level about why volleyball has become a less renowned, less popular sport here in the US, but also how media creates and proliferates popularity, both of sports in general, but also of individual athletes.
Yeah, I do love that in your book, you ask a question: what if money was to get into professional volleyball? Like, what if someone injected enough capital into professional league volleyball that it became a big enough sport that people will follow for their international stars? And I just really enjoyed the world building you did to create this alternate universe where men's volleyball is on the rise as a, you know, international professional sport.
Yeah, I think it was like interesting to parallel that with the same kind of seemingly random whims of like billionaires making decisions about what should be popular, with in that same world building section, like talking about tracking the rise of Six and Green's rise to fame, but like a combination of like random moments as well as algorithmically incentivized usages of social media platforms have allowed them to become famous at a time where the internet functioned in a certain way.
Yeah, like your book shares so many like common traits with our world. It like echoes a lot of things that that our world has, like COVID, celebrity parasocialism, and like pro sports like ecosystem, and like how like publicity works for athletes. But at the same time, it's set in an alternate reality where two Asian American trans women can be celebrated as pro athletes under these structures of racism and trans misogyny. So it is kind of like a fantasy in a way, but a fantasy that is informed by pessimism. And I'm just curious, like, how did you negotiate like what realities to keep, adapt, and like sanitize?
I think that like inherent contradiction in that choice, where like they could only, like them charting the paths that they have, was only possible if they like complied with the really regressive essentialism of gender and biology. But at the same time, within the timeline of the novel, they are in this like rarefied position to like live and work as professional athletes. So I wanted them to have a journey to that point that was like obstacle free enough without like depriving, you know, but of course the book doesn't remove, as you mentioned, the systems and structures of racism and trans misogyny either. So it was just, you know, balancing the yes and on the page.
Yeah, something that I thought was really interesting that you did with your character, Six and Green, is as of the time the book takes place, they're both veteran volleyball players, right? They've been in the league for several years. They're at the top of their game. They're veritable stars in the league with, you know, massive followings. And they're to the point where they're starting to think about what life looks like after professional volleyball. And I guess, can you talk to us about why you decided to tell a sports story that centers on veteran athletes?
Yeah, I think like Six and Green are in their late 20s and an athlete's career is so short. And I think they're both maybe a little bit more panicked than they probably need to be. Like they should, if they stay healthy, have at least another decade of pro game in their careers. But at the same time, this book takes place in 2021 when, you know, uncertainty was like very, and you know, has been, continues to be in the air. But having that pressure to like know what they're going to do with their lives, to like understand their legacy in their sport, their careers after that, you know, they're not fresh-eyed, they're very aware that their time is finite, makes every play count.
Yeah, and Six and Green shoulders so much responsibility as well. You know, what I personally really love about a good sports story is, you know, following athletes at the top of their game and getting in their heads as they prepare, you know, to play at a high level. But for Six and Green, not only do they have to worry about competing at that championship level, but they also carry the burden of representing identities with so many intersections, right? They're Asian American trans women playing in a men's league, and also in a relationship. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you know, balance all of those narratives in your story?
Yeah, more is more. We love, you know, a little maximalism. I think the like hyper visibility of trans people in daily life and the media, compounded with like Six and Green having access to a micro form of celebrity within their pro sports world, just felt like a way to explore some questions that I think about in my life about like how to engage with politics as it intersects our online selves. And I thought that Six and Green, like in their position, would feel especially pressured to like have a style guide for how to engage in, you know, XYZ event. But they're like, at the same time, they're not a news organization, you know?
Yeah. And in your story, you include kind of like a Greek chorus that represents the internet commentary boards to apply that pressure, that react to everything that happens in like the previous scene, you know, because everything they do is so high profile and so scrutinized. Can you talk to us a little about your decision in making like the voice of the public such a prominent character in your book?
And I just want to add like a little question to the end of that. Like the social media posts are, you know, not delineated. They're like just part of the story, and it kind of like goes back and forth between what's happening with Six and Green and then like how the public is reacting on social media. So I'm just curious as to like what was the decision behind that too, when you could have separated social media reactions and the actual events of the story happening into separate parts.
Yeah, I picture the book as a back and forth, a rally, a volley, if you will, between like in an official narrative that's following Six and Green as they're living their lives, and these sections of polyvocality, and wanted there to be a tension between a reader's sense of what's real and what's not. I think the online Greek chorus chimes in with information that isn't provided in the main narrative. And it's some things are true and never discussed, and some things are obviously fabricated, distorted projections of, you know, fandom. I feel like one of the like meta narratives about media over the last couple decades are how like Web 2.0 have democratized the internet and like given anyone with a IP address the ability to like shape, you know, narrative and public discourse, and was curious about like writing that into the novel so that there's not a hierarchy between, you know, anyone speaking, whether aloud or on their little touch screen, and that it's all language, it's all giant square quotes content, and it's up to the reader to decide how like seriously you take an individual sentence, whether that's describing like Green putting on her makeup or if it's saying Green's super hot, you know, from some stranger.
It's definitely been like a double-edged sword, and I do love how you captured the unique way that people can talk with complete confidence on the internet in those sections.
Everyone's an expert behind the screen. I just have to say, like, some of the posts that the netizens were writing were terrible, like very misogynistic, trans misogynistic, but there were also like really funny posts in there. And did you have like a one liner that you're really proud of that you managed to like put into the book? You're like, yeah, that was funny. Yeah, that was clever.
Honestly, I'm proud of a lot of them.
Yeah.
There are many ones that I love that I edited out over the course of the revision process just because they didn't fit where they needed to fit anymore. It was trying to like capture that like, you know, horseshoe deranged logic that like makes absolutely no sense and is probably fucked up, but like sometimes it's a little bit funny, and trying to find a way to, you know, push my own comfort discomfort a little bit and see if there's literary value in this kind of language.
Yeah, I one of the posts that like highlighted was like Green said, quote, we need new trans representation, quote, and then gave us a one woman performance of trans victim, trans villain and trans whore all in the same week. And I was like, this should not be funny, but like I'm finding myself snickering just a little bit.
Because did she not give a performance that one might call Oscar worthy?
Yeah. How did Six and Green evolve with each draft? Because like I find their relationship to be really fascinating. I mean, there is a reason why they are online celebrities, because how often do you see two Asian American trans women in professional volleyball who also are in a romantic relationship with each other? I mean, that is like pure entertainment, pure television, but that has to create a strain in their romantic relationship, like balancing their personal brands and then like, you know, being personal with their partner. So how did they evolve with your draft, and what traits did you realize each character needed in order to like create tension in their relationship?
Yeah. In the opening scene, I kind of like use this trope about how like we can't tell these two people apart because they're like have the same identity. So we just picture the same like vague blob of a human, whether in real life or in trying to imagine a fictional character in the experience of reading. And it's like kind of a caricature-ish way to think about character. But I feel like as the drafts progressed, making Green more insistent on girl bossing and performing and working as her response to stress and trauma, and then having Six have a nearly opposite impulse. She kind of wants to shut down, she wants to withdraw, she wants to just try to find a few minutes to process before having to go to sleep early so that she can wake up for practice well rested the next day. And just to have that tension amplified by like for the first part of the tournament when they should theoretically get to reunite, they're like under pandemic quarantine restrictions. So even while they're in the same hotel, they're still video chatting or FaceTiming as the parody is called. From their separate hotel rooms. So like they're just like talking past each other as tension ramps up.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that you set this book in like a pandemic-y world, because it's not COVID, it's COVID. And I'm like, yeah, like it was a really uncertain time for everyone, but particularly like artists who had like shows and athletes who had games, and a lot of them had to kind of like quickly find a way to pivot. And I thought it was like interesting that you brought up this this problem of like, okay, the world is moving on, so we need to get with the program. And it's like, well, is that like a rightful, is that a healthy decision? Because clearly like it, like being away from your loved one for like a year because you guys are in rival teams and playing, you know, like doing like different training regimens. I was like, yeah, that's a deal breaker in so many relationships, but somehow these two are able to stick it out together. So yeah, it was like a very interesting relationship to read.
Yeah. I think there are moments where they question like, you know, how much of this is just like relationship of convenience and how much of this is like quote unquote true love. Read the book. Yeah. Form an opinion.
One of the later events in your book is the murder of three Asian trans women in Alpharetta. And actually I'm from Alpharetta, so I was like,
no way.
Yeah. I'm guessing this was like a reference to the Atlanta spa murders, or like, yeah. So I was just like, yeah, it just kind of like put me back in that like time period where everyone was grieving so much and there was like so much anger and so much like outcry on social media. And obviously Green and Six, who share racial and gender identities with the victims, like they're devastated by the news. Of course, they're impacted by it, but they have different feelings about how to go about like publicly showing their support to like their communities. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on like celebrities and the pressure social media puts on them to be activists, and if that's like actually fair.
Yeah, it's super complicated because I think with certain celebrities, I think one could argue that like taking a clear stance in an election or just saying Free Palestine and making that clear can like quote unquote move the needle with their platform of followers. And at the same time, in the advent of social media, we've also seen a lot of like virtue signaling, performative allyship, and like instances where celebrities stated stances don't align with their actions. And so there's like, I think like a, there is, I think, a disproportionate scrutiny and expectation that like celebrities, many of whom are rich, you know, are like serving as role models for how to like be, you know, quote unquote, good people, or like have good politics, when they can play their role, but they largely aren't activists. Or that, I don't know, should an activist aspire to be famous?
Yeah, I think your book does a really good job exploring what it would be like, you know, because, you know, Six and Green themselves are trailblazers, right? They're, you know, they're seen as role models because they're the first, like a lot of trailblazers, like they're the first to be so visible in at that level. And there's a lot of expectations, right? Like, I think your book does a good job balancing their personal struggles with like how to act with like the public struggles, the public pressure, a la the social media Greek chorus, and how that plays off each other, right? Because, you know, the another theme in your that your book explores is the, you know, the seeking of clout, social media clout, right? And how social media both creates community but also instigates jealousy and competition as well, right? And I think that, you know, the way that you like, you really do feel like, you know, these are, you know, at the end of the day, it is a sports story. These are about athletes who like want to like do really well in their sport, but because of their identity, because of their where they sit in their community, are also asked to be all these other things by virtue of being, you know, the first and being good at what they do, right?
Yeah, the trap of representation and tokenism, it's super brutal. Yeah, where they can't just. The double-edged sword of wanting to, yeah, they can't just exist, but like they do have some sense that like, oh, if we play up being famous, we could make more money and like protect this like vague, uncertain future that that Six and Green, you know, like all of us are have fear around, but at what cost?
Yeah. Yeah, I like when I had picked up your book without like kind of reading the details of like what happens in the plot. I was like really surprised that like there was a character in your book who, you know, is still a closeted like trans woman, and like she considers Green to like be this unicorn, and think like, oh, I can't be Green, so is there even a reason for me to try? And I just thought that was like a really good way to show how tokenism is not always great for the community that they're supposedly representing. So, yeah, like, what thoughts were going through your head when you were writing the teammates that Six and Green, you know, work with? Because volleyball is a very much team sport. And if you're not in sync with each other, if you don't have great synergy, then essentially you're like, you don't get to play at all.
Yeah. The character you're describing is also on the second string. So there's this like, while Green is like both a role model of like an out trans woman who's very self-possessed and beautiful, because of course the title, there's something about her, like, again, at the timeline of the novel, is like so famous enough that she like kind of sucks the air out of the room, and like not intentionally, but like doesn't really create an opening for someone else to exist alongside her. With other teammates, yeah, I feel like that the tension between like a bunch of bros and like Six and Green existing on their team, and like they figure out how to get along well enough so that they can like communicate and play together. Six and Green also have two of their good friends are also in the league, but on neither of their teams. Those good friends are cis gay men, and the four of them, like, in their shared public queerness and their shared like participation in like the pro athlete as influencer game, like kind of feel like are aware of like being like tokens within, feel like tokens within the broader league of like largely straight bros. And so just having that like array of dynamics kind of circulating in person as Six and Green are grieving the murders of those three Asian trans women just compounds that like sense of alienation and desire to grieve more meaningfully. And yeah, as we've been talking about, Six and Green take different tacks both to responding to that grief, but also to how they interact with their colleagues.
Yeah, I thought it was, I mean, it was very sad, but also kind of funny how like their bro teammates just like did not mention anything about those murders to Six and Green. It was just like, and like I forgot who it was in the book, but they're just like, well, what did we expect? Like the minimum? Like it was it's just like they're cis guys in like in sports. Like maybe it just didn't show up in their radar. Like you don't right. know.
Yeah. And it's like never deliberately, it's never confronted or revealed like that these people see the news and just didn't think to mention it, or were too scared to mention it, or is this like, you know, separate spheres of like timelines and news feeds where they didn't even hear about this, because when these bros open their phone, they just see, you know, like bro workout inspiration.
Yeah, or like protein shake recipes. Yeah.
All right. I really want to talk about the volleyball in your book, because, you know, the mark of a really great sports story is not only the drama between the athletes, but also the drama in the game, right? And I think your book does a really great job describing the action of a volleyball game. And you do it through a variety of different ways, right? We get the point of views of the players themselves, but we also get insights from commentators. We get the thoughts of the fans in attendance. It made for us just some really exciting sports action scenes. And I just wanted to ask, you know, can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, how you went about writing those sports scenes?
Yeah, I think there's within that like first string, second string dynamic within teams, like there's the scrimmage or the play at hand where you're just trying to get the ball over the net and score a point. But Six in particular is also trying to like prove herself on this new team she just joined this season, to show that she's should be bumped up from second string to first string like she thought she would be. So yeah, I feel like a good sports scene should have like both the direct action of like which team are we rooting for, who do we want to win, but like also what is the like undercurrent of narrative that's driving it. And one of these scenes, Six kind of ropes in and also gets roped in by like one of her junior teammates who's already starting, and she wants to teach him and help him improve like a really basic move that as a professional player he shouldn't be like second guessing himself on, but you know, for the purposes of the novel, he's a little bit hesitant on his block out. And she wants to subtly perform to her coaches that she would play well with him by like demonstrating them, the two of them working together during team warm up. So there's like also that like filter of performance and performativity that I'm looking at the sport through. Yeah, I love sports.
Did you have to like watch a lot of volleyball games to like to get like the optics right of just like, oh yeah, this is like how like an insane underdog move would be made or whatever?
Yeah, I got to watch a lot of volleyball. Yeah, I definitely learned a lot about technique from like, and I was also like questioning my own relationship to like spectating and like looking at footage. But like learned a lot about moves so that I could figure out what would translate on the page in a way that's understandable, but not too oversimplified either.
Yeah. I mean, I love that, like, it's not just, like, brief descriptions. Like, you, like, there's huge chunks of, like, a couple chapters that are just the volleyball game interspersed with, like, you know, the Greek chorus becomes the audience watching the game and the spectators. And I thought that, you know, I was riveted by the volleyball action. As someone who also enjoys watching volleyball, it was really cool just to see the kinetic nature of the sport, you know, being translated on page. So I thought you did that really, really well.
Thanks.
Yeah. As someone who does not watch a lot of sports other than figure skating, I was just like, damn, like I am the spectator. Like I am the fans who are just like, I have no idea what's going on, but look at their bodies. Like, look at them go. They look so hot.
and isn't that part of it?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I felt included. I felt represented like by the fans in your book. We are running towards the end of our time, but I did want to ask like this one specific question. So there are characters who like in their parentheses, it says like how many followers they have, like 875K followers, also like their height and like their weight. And I just thought they were like very good ways to kind of get the reader to sense who these kind of people are without that much description. Like, what made you decide to add, like, those parentheses in your book?
In sports television, there are these chyrons when an athlete appears that gives us, you know, those key stats, how many points they scored per game on average. And I think the sport, or a sport that matters in this book and in life is that demonic follower count. And it's like immediately implicates the reader in assessing someone's relative fame and value relative to someone else. Like, oh, that dweeb only has 20,000 followers. Like,
it's like, why does this athlete have like 10K followers and they're like on the starting line, whereas like six is like on like the second string and like she's like the most popular in her team? So yeah, I was like, oh, politics being introduced just by like follower counts and like height differences too. People get very uppity about like how tall six is and they're like, well, I'm still better in some ways. And I'm like, oh, that's like interesting.
It's, yeah, fame can't buy you everything.
Yeah. All right. Before we let you go, do you want to ask, like, obviously, congratulations on the book. But, you know, we also want to know, like, what's next for you? Are you working on anything else? Any more books or anything else in the pipe? Or just enjoying your victory lap?
Yeah. I heard that. yeah, I've got some more Six and Green summer book events coming up in the next month. I'm producing a show that goes up in New York this fall with artist Will Rawls. And yeah, always writing.
Awesome. Well, Benedict, congrats again on the launch of your debut novel. And thank you for joining us on Books and Boba. It was really great having you.
Thanks, Marvin. Thanks, Rira.
And that was our author chat with Benedict Nguyen. Her debut novel, Hot Girls with Balls, is available now at booksellers everywhere, including, as always, the Books and Boba online bookshop. So if you enjoyed our conversation and are interested in checking out her book, you can pick up a copy by heading over to booksandboba.com and clicking on our bookshop link. All sales made through our online bookstore support not only us here at Books and Boba, but also your local bookstore. So we really appreciate everyone who has purchased the book through our bookstore so far. Before we go, just a quick reminder that our August 2025 book club pick is The Wangs vs. the World by Jake Chang, which is an Asian American family comedy about the Wangs, a wealthy Chinese Taiwanese American family on a road trip across the country after losing everything during the 2008 financial crisis. The book's been a lot of fun to read, and I'm really excited to discuss this book with you, Rira, for next week's episode.
Yeah, it's gonna be really fun because these characters are real kooky.
Yeah, and if you finished the book and have thoughts to share with us as well, please let us know either on Discord or on our Goodreads forums so that we can include your thoughts on the book in our podcast discussion as well. But with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you once again to Benedict Nguyen for joining us, and we'll see y'all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Great news! The Korean Drama Podcast is back for our sixth season.
The Korean Drama Podcast is the podcast about watching Korean dramas by people who don't watch Korean dramas. Hosted by Candace, Jane, and me, Kim.
Wait, if it's our sixth season, can we still say we're people who don't watch Korean dramas?
I'm sure it's fine. Let's just call it character development, which we love in K-dramas.
For our new season, we're recapping the hit 2025 romantic fantasy series Heavenly Ever After, about an elderly couple who reunite in the afterlife. Only he's now in his 30s while she's chosen to appear in her 80s.
Awkward.
So join us each week as we discuss the highs and lows of the afterlife in Heavenly Ever After, episode by episode.
Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.